Any questions by the committee? Thank you, Ms. Kennedy. Incidentally, if you'll give that material to Connie Sipes, who has been working with this committee on this particular piece of legislation, and Sig Murphy would also be working with her. We're trying to get a consensus which would be agreeable to most people who are involved in this, and then pass our bill, which we hope will work. Ms. Smith, please.
Yes, she is approaching the mic at this time, Senator. Good afternoon. My name is Jim Smith. December 1982, our purchase is going to end in 1983. On April 20th, August 30th, September 27th, October 5th of 1983, the car was taken in for repairs on the college student. During the first 2 weeks of November, our almost killed little boy, he stepped out of the car, I tried to turn, the car was still locked on me, and at that point, I called Consumer Protection because I knew if I had went back to order before, the car would have been fixed. I spoke with Scotty Dawkins, the investigator for Consumer Protection, on November 16th. I received an email from him saying that he had gotten in touch with Rory before, and they were more than happy, they would be more than happy to repair my car if I brought it back in. Okay, I took the car back in December 7th. 2 weeks later, the car was still in. At that point, Scotty Dawkins was in June. So I called the Ford Motor Trade Company for assistance. At that time, a young man named Scott told me that the Ford Motor Credit, that Ford Motor Company would be sending out some foreign management and field representatives, and that I could fill out his complaint and he would look at the car and make a decision on what the problem was. Now, at that time, 2 days later, Walt Barnett, manager, service manager at Worthington Ford, called me, asked me to bring the car in. The general manager of the field company had just taken a look at the car, and that they found out what the problem was. Okay, I took the car in December 28th. Walt Barnett, he had given me a rental car that Wednesday, that Friday, he called my job, asked me to return the rental car. Told me that if my car was down, that I could not drive it, and that he could not furnish me with a rental car because I did not purchase the extended warranty plan when I purchased the car in 1972. So I said to him that my car had been in the shop 5 times already, that I didn't have any other means of transportation back and forth to work. He told me that was my problem. And at that time, my wife had me stay with me. He said that since I had trouble, that he would not charge me to fix my car. I said, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. So I went out, and on December 30th, I went to get a car from Little Rick of Alaska, which would cost me $14.95 per day, 15 cents a mile. And the car, I was calling back every other day to see if my car was being repaired, and they told me no. At that point, I got in touch with Nancy Etchison from Hebron, Michigan, who is the service manager for the manufacturing plant. At that time, she told me that the reason why my car had not been repaired is because Anchorage did not have a part for the car, the manufacturers did not have a part for the car, and that they would have to call over the United, around the United States to find a part for my car. So I was continuing to rent the rental car money for the management. January 1984, I was served a court order to vacate my apartment. I was being kicked out. I had been kicked out because cannot afford to pay rent because I was being considered a fee. And I also had to get an extension of my car payment because I could not pay my car payment because of the rental fee. So on January 24th, 2 days before I had to appear in court, Tom Beckman, he contacted me, and he said, I can't remember the name of the company. And he was actually in his building, and he had told and informed me that he had just found out about my situation on the 20th of January, and I had submitted a complaint to Wilmington Ford on December 19th. And he informed me that the parts of my car was in Anchorage, that they had the parts for my car, they did not have to search around for the parts, and that I could pick up my car in a couple of days. And he also told me that Walt Burnett had informed him that I was issued a rental car to use the whole month of from December 28th and 25th of January. And that is not true because I have a copy of all the invoices that I had paid out fees for renting cars in the rent of Alaska. And I did pick up my car, had it for December 26th. So far, I haven't had any problems with the car stealing. But my question is, the car has been in the shop 6 times already. The last time it was in the shop, it was in there from December 28th through January 26th. I was suspended from my apartment. I couldn't make the car payment. And what happened? My warranty was ran out. What happens if the power steering goes out again? Or if what happens if I hit somebody? What am I supposed to do? They won't fix my car, they don't want to refund my money. And it's unfair. Why should I pay $250 a month in payment for a brand new car when I can't even get any enjoyment out of it? And I am very, I'm in favor of the living law, and I am in the process of getting a petition started in Eagle River and also in Anchorage, because I'm sure that there are a lot of other people out there that have the same problems who are unable to come in and testify or write letters or to do anything about it. But we do need to get this woman, this girl, passed. Otherwise, a lot of other people will be doing this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. I might note at this time that, and for the rest of the people on the network, that it's certainly important that you notify your legislators of any concerns you might have. There are certainly only 3 or 4 of us in this committee at the present time, and there are numbers of others who would certainly like to hear from you. At this time, I'll go to Juneau. We have Henry Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Henry Pratt. I'm appearing representing the Alaska Auto Dealers Association. I won't take but just a moment to reiterate the association's position. We favor and support passage of a lemon law. We have submitted to your committee, Mr. Chairman, fully knowledgeable of the fact that it's the committee that writes the law, and not ourselves or any other entity, but the legislature. But we have taken the liberty to submit to you a suggested change in the bill, and we have done so in the form of a bill. The changes that we have suggested, we feel, will tighten the bill, will make it more appropriate for the consumer, and remove many of the ambiguities which might very well lead to additional lawsuits in the future, which would not serve the purpose of the consumer. It would be very tragic if a person, in the process of trying to accomplish the purpose of the bill, ended up finding himself entangled in many legalities and lawsuits, in which case he would still be unhappy, and so would we. I think the cover letter which accompanies the bill is very specific in terms of sectional analysis of the bill. With that, I'm going to state that we are available for any questions or future work on it. Attorney for the association is in Anchorage and spoke to you a moment ago. Mr. Murphy. I have with me this afternoon a gentleman from our association and also a representative of the Fairbanks Association. He will state the policy position of the organization. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Henry. Are there any questions to the committee? Ralph Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I represent the dealer body in Fairbanks. I'm the owner of Seekins Ford Lincoln Mercury there. Quite frankly, we're in favor of legislation of this type. I think we have some suggestions about how to make sure that this bill would be most beneficial to the owners of automobiles in Alaska. We as automobile dealers, operating in the most extreme weather conditions in the nation, have repeatedly and continually been under what I call probably oppressive scrutiny by our manufacturers because we do too much warranty repair. And not too long ago, I was told by a Ford Motor Company official that our dealership was the highest over-standard warranty repair dealership in the nation. I've always wanted to be number one in something. I asked them if they were going to give me a plaque, but I don't think that they really wanted to give me an award for that particular achievement. We were told that we over-repair customers' vehicles and are repeatedly harassed to get our warranty problem under control. Obviously, you can see that the manufacturers, through their various parts and service divisions, are on one side of the issue, while the dealerships and owners are really on the other side. The manufacturers perceive a warranty problem to be too much repair, while the dealerships and owners really recognize it to be an existing problem with the automobile in question, the repair of which falls under the liability that they assume when they issue their express written warranty. Now, therefore, I'd say we as dealers feel that the best way to get a truly effective bill would be to get us out of the middle. For an example, we've heard people testify today about long delays in getting the parts necessary to repair their vehicles. This results from a policy decision on the part of the manufacturer which states that warranty parts come to the state of Alaska under what we call a stock order basis. And if we want them any faster, either the dealer or the owner of the car must pay the additional handling charges and freight. Now, we don't really think that as a dealer body, is particularly fair, either to the customer or to us. For example, an engine block, if we were to replace it, might cost $200 to $300 in air freight to get that thing here on a timely basis. Now, in some instances, that can be more money than we made on the car in the sale of the automobile. Or if it wasn't an automobile that was sold by our dealership, then we would have no recourse but to tell the customer that we cannot pay that at air freight and if he wants it repaired faster than he should. Well, the pressure that we get as a result of high warranty conditions many times becomes very oppressive to the point where the dealerships become gun-shy. I believe that that's part of the problem. Many of us are put under prior approval situations where we can't get a repair on an automobile until we have a prior approval from the manufacturer. And there are many misunderstandings in the customer's minds about the relationships between dealers and manufacturers. For example, most people don't understand that our relationship is merely contractual, that we are not an extension of our manufacturer, that we have a contract with them that specifically outlines our duties and responsibilities in order to be able to buy cars and parts from them on a wholesale basis, one of which is to repair cars for them and charge them under the warranty repair system. Now, we have a very unilateral relationship with our manufacturers too. In most cases, if we don't like the way that they tell us to do things, we can quit, and if they don't like the way we're doing it, they can get rid of us. So it's not really one in which we have a whole lot of input into that relationship. We also feel that as a result of this pressure that comes to the dealerships, that if this bill were to address some of those issues, that we could better serve the people of the state of Alaska who have warranty problems from time to time. We have huge investments as dealers. We want to keep our customers happy. We know that good service is equal to more sales. Now, many product problems are first detected in Alaska automobile dealerships. There are many instances that I can recall, even in my own dealership, where we were the first people to find a product problem that eventually was corrected throughout the nation. We, for an example, give technical service bulletins, which are continual updates from Ford Motor Companies, not only to our service management, but to each technician that works for us. We have 2 to 3 times the average training number of hours for our technicians, because we aren't as close to supplies of labor. And if we get someone in our dealerships who is a highly trained person, we want to keep that person and keep them highly trained. I believe that some of the things that we've talked about in some of our approaches, which you have copies of, deserve some very close scrutiny, because I do believe, in all of the associations that I have with the other dealers throughout the state, that we as a body are interested in being able to get that person's car back on the road with the least amount of trouble, the least amount of expense to us, and also to the customer involved. And we want to make that very clear. We are not in opposition to this bill, but are in favor of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Is there any questions by the committee?
How do we work it so that one of the issues brought up by one of the folks testifying earlier to keep the distributor involved, so that not to exclude them, so that the relationship just isn't with the manufacturer, that unknown back there in Detroit, rather than the local dealer, so to speak, and so that they'd stay in there. How would you do that without him having a financial interest in it, outside of his just keeping goodwill in the neighborhood?
Well, I believe that, for example, when we do warranty work, we're paid for it. And right now, I believe almost all manufacturers are paid at the same hourly rate that they would get for a retail repair. And the whole thing is that if it comes back and it wasn't repaired right the first time, you don't get paid the second time. So there's an economic incentive to make sure that it's fixed right the first time.
But we'd all sit here and admit that quite often that it doesn't happen.
That's correct. And what happens there, I believe, is when we run into some particular, well, for example, let me give you just a quick rundown, if I may. Many cars today are running electronic fuel injection systems. There are as many as 11 sensors on that system that sense everything from the barometric temperature, the ambient pressure, the ambient temperature, the engine temperature, the throttle plate position, the amount of oxygen in the exhaust gases, and feed that into a little onboard computer then that makes the decision as to how much fuel to feed into that engine. Any one of those sensors could go wrong or go bad. Sometimes we will find a defective sensor, for example. We'll replace that defective sensor, put the car back out on the road, another sensor goes out very shortly. And you can find then that the problem is traced to maybe a voltage peaking problem that is not coming from the electronic fuel injection system at all, but it's coming through the rest of the electrical system. Well, we find that there are some very complicated things with automobiles that we didn't have to face 5 or 10 years ago that we're having to face now, which means that we are putting huge investments into equipment, into training. For example, 1 year, just my required tools alone to handle that model year cost me almost $12,000.
But what I'm getting at is, what's to assure me as one of your customers, or at least somebody that you're servicing a product from the company you represent, one or the other, that you're going to be my advocate, so to speak, now, with the manufacturer, because I'm dealing with you. You're the guy I bought the car from, or you're the guy that serviced my car in the case I didn't buy it from you. And I'm having problems. I got a lemon. And what's to keep you as my advocate to the manufacturer when when we both know I really got a problem and it doesn't seem to be working out. And I don't know who I'd go to unless it was a third party, a state agency, or to look for an advocate.
Well, I believe that the very pressure that's put on the dealership by the manufacturer in such a case would be a very effective tool. If that manufacturer is notified that that defect exists, that there have been a number of attempts at it, that this many days have expired, you're going to be sure that manufacturer is going to be putting an awful lot of attention into the dealership that's involved to make sure that that guy is doing it and that he's getting all the technical help that he needs to be able to find the problem.
But the
today there isn't that.
The testimony that we're getting isn't indicating that at all times.
Well, I think you're also going to find that from time to time, yes, you're going to find people who are operating an automobile dealership who may not be doing it at quite the level that you'd like to have them be doing it. I'm sure that the manufacturers would find that same thing to be true. However, I do believe, once again, the incentive here at that point, for an example, in order for me to get the training that I need to have in my dealership, I bring a man from Ford Motor Company to Fairbanks. Now, I imagine that poor dealer in Ketchikan doesn't have that availability. But what happens when the manufacturer all of a sudden has the onus put on him to make sure that dealership has the proper training? They supply it.
Yeah, we're running out of network time, so.
Okay, and that's basically what I'm saying. Put it on the manufacturer, he'll put it back on us.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We're running very short of time, and I hate to do this, but Jim, we're going to have another hearing on this bill. You live here in Oakbay. Would you come at that particular time? Can we notify you?
Yes, that would be fine. Will it be just a very few minutes? I mean, after the decision.
Okay, we'll go back to Saldotna. Do we have any witnesses there? Mr. Mullen or Mr. McGagan there, please.
Just approaching the mic one moment.
Let me see, all right.
This is Frank Mullen of Saldotna. Part owner of Manassas Ford, and in general, we're in favor of a bill of this sort. I have one or two, actually three or four, recommendations that would clarify things in the interest of fairness. I'll mention only one of them now and submit the request to you in the mail. What I'd like to submit is that because of the collateral charges, which are written in as part of the refund, I'm assuming that the manufacturers for liability would include the only the invoice price to the dealer and freight. That therefore collateral charges should be paid if there is a refund by the selling dealer. I don't think that it would be fair to write it so that any dealer would have to pay collateral charges, which could include profit, undercoating, waxing, and strikes, whatever. That should not be written so that any dealer would have to get a refund of that, only the selling dealer. That's my number one thing, and as I said, I'll submit several of these things to the section.
An executive session?
2 minutes. He didn't. No. Well, thank you, Mr. Mullen. Now we'll go to the final witness, Mr. McGagan.
Oh,
yeah,
my talk. His name again?
No.
Okay, well, my problem is I bought an 81 Chevrolet diesel in Hutchings, and the truck had about 26,000 miles on it, and had a motor problem which developed around 12,000 miles, and then a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty.
I'll do that even if
you're they did not honor the warranty as such. They would take it in and look at it, and they said there was nothing wrong. The engine finally blew up. They put another motor into the truck. The problem, come to find out, at the end was in the fuel system itself. But before they could get it fixed, after they put the second engine in, the truck burned to the ground. I've had a state Amherst fire report that says the cause of the fire was faulty fuel line installation, which was done by Hutchins Chevrolet.
He wants the microphone since he's in the session. He's never worked up.
I have liability on the rig. I ended up $13,000 out of my pocket. I've got a truck with 27,000 miles on it, which is in the yard for just broken ground. And being very hard at that turnaround, bought another GM product. I bought an 82 with a 6.2 diesel. I made it 53 miles with this rig. The engine blew up and in. They started using water real bad and made it to the next dealer. It was taken into a shop in Huntington, Texas. It was worked on there. They found it used water. They didn't know where it was going. They said, use it, run it a little bit, and see what the problem was, and we could detect it. I drove the truck, and I got 150 miles onto it. I went through about 6 gallons of land freezing into it by then. They took it in. They put new heads onto it. They took it for a test drive.
So you can do that.
It sat there for approximately 30 days, but they were waiting for parts and some more heads for it. They put another set of heads on for it. I tried to take the truck back to Alaska on here. I made it halfway across the state of Texas. The fuel pump went out of it. The only one in captivity was set in Billings, Montana. So I put an electric fuel pump onto it. I made it there. In Billings, Montana, they took the truck. They put load valves, they put injectors, they put a new fuel pump, and one head onto it. Then the truck made it there into Canada and started using water again. I run it from there into Alaska here. I took it to Hutchins Chevrolet. They said it had a definite problem. At that time, they put a starter onto it. Instead of using water, and they would work it into their schedule. The truck ran me approximately another 10 days. My starter fell off, going to Sterling. It fell off on the road. When I seen a bounce, it came off. I stopped, picked the starter up. It was still running. I didn't shut the road off. I made it into the dealer. They took the truck in. They worked on it again. This time, they had blowout problems. They had injector problems and head problems on it again. At present time, I think GM has got about $6,000 in the truck. The engine, to me, was a dud from day one. It still is a dud. The engine is not in the truck at the present time. At my expense, I had the diesel pulled out. I now have a 350 gas engine into it. I'm happy with the rig. But as far as reimbursement, GM or Hutchins Chevrolet, they have kept promising me. They said on the 81 model that they would make it right. The only thing they have done is promised me. They said, send me a bill of what you did and rent a car for the downtime. I rented a vehicle. I sent the bill. I wrote it to the phone. I got a hold of the sales representative, the employee here. The man has done absolutely nothing. As far as my favorite GM products, it is not worth a pot of blood. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Martin. We appreciate your patience with us, and I believe that's all we have.
We have
another meeting coming up in this particular room. I would like to thank the network and for those of you who were with us this afternoon for your patience and for your input. That's always
this is Tom the moderator, Juno, and that concludes this teleconference.